Welcome to Spiritual Shenanigans, the podcast where science meets spirituality, where we explore the mysteries of the mind and the vastness of the universe. If you're someone who is fascinated by the stars and intrigued by the power of the mind and the depths of human consciousness, then join us as we delve into the realms of astral travel, alien encounters, and share tools and tips for practical spirituality. Each week, we'll journey beyond the ordinary, exploring topics that expand our awareness. Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, a scientist or a seeker, Spiritual Shenanigans offers a playful space where open minds come together to explore the extraordinary.
Hi, it's me, Jace, and welcome to our next episode of Spiritual Shenanigans. Today, we are here to teach you all about the astral body and astral projection. Have you ever wondered what it feels like to travel to other dimensions? If you don't, well, you're about to find out.
Thank you for that intro, Jace. So today we're going to be talking all about the astral realm.
You're welcome.
And before we begin, I think it would be important to make a distinction between the astral realm and the etheric realm, because I think a lot of people are maybe more familiar with the etheric realm, but not so much the astral. Ryan, what are your thoughts on that? Could you explain a little bit about what the differences are between the two?
Yeah, so the etheric realm is the space right, basically above the 3D realm, and that is sometimes called the lower astral realm, but it's probably separate from the astral realm. So that's kind of like 4D, four-dimensional, because there's still the same concept of space. You still see the same space as you do in the 3D world. The only difference is that time is kind of dilated. So with the etheric realm, think of it like, so there's two givens in life, that you're born and that you die. So with the etheric realm and with astral projection, one important reason to want to do this is because it kind of prepares you for the second. It prepares you for death. So getting out of your body is going to first enable you to see that there's more to your soul than your physical body, first of all, if you need that proof. And also, out-of-body experiences like astral projections are very, very similar to near-death experiences. And if you know anything about near-death experiences, there could be a variety of different ones. So a lot of people describe it as being chaotic. And like I said, time doesn't act the same way in the etheric realm. So they exit their body and they kind of don't know where they are. They might be like above their body or like, and then next thing you know, they're down the hole and it's not really stable. It's a very unstable place. And that's why people call it the lower astral realm too, because it's kind of unstable. So one reason that you want to astral project is to kind of stabilize yourself in these higher realms so that you can move on easier and not be stuck in like one way, because otherwise you're not really prepared in just living in a 3D body for what comes next.
So, Ryan, question based on what you just said, because the last time that I believe that I may have astral traveled, it wasn't so much traveling because I really didn't leave my body. So what happens was I was in my room and I was fully conscious of the fact that I was like in some other state, not a normal, you know, waking 3D state. And my husband was next to me and I was able to like, I was trying to like shake him and wake him up, and there was other people in the room. It was the strangest thing. Like, it didn't leave my body. You know, I didn't see myself outside of my body. I still felt like I do in the 3D world, but there was other people in the room and I was like, you know, my husband was sleeping. I was trying to wake him up. What state was I in? Was I astral traveling but not conscious enough to leave my body? Like, what exactly happened?
So you were in your astral body for sure, especially if you saw other people around and you saw the same environment. So that's an example of being in your astral body and being in the etheric realm, because you were able to see everything around you perfectly. So that's an example of your consciousness being awake while your body is asleep. And that's what happens. As soon as your body goes to sleep, usually your mind goes to sleep too, and you kind of seamlessly transition into the dream state. But when you do these spiritual exercises, when you work on this, then you are going to, your mind is going to stay awake even when your body sleeps. And what happens is that you could wake up in the etheric realm, you could wake up in the astral realm. So that's definitely what happened, because that's how it started happening with me, like I talked about in the first episode.
So would you say that's the same thing as sleep paralysis? Because I've definitely experienced that on so many occasions where I'm seeing other things in the room with me and I'm still aware that I'm in my body, but I'm also not able to move or make a sound.
Yeah, that's definitely sleep paralysis. And sleep paralysis, you are in the etheric realm in your astral body. And it's kind of scary for a lot of people because they can't move. So that creates a feeling of panic. And from there, you're going to attract what you're feeling and what you're thinking. So a lot of people end up having negative experiences because of that, because that panic ends up causing them to resonate with things that are kind of that are darker. So one way to avoid that is when you are conscious in that state, get vertical. So when I say that, like, try to kind of push yourself forward so that you could, like, basically pretend that you're getting out of bed. So just push yourself forward from your forehead, starting with your forehead, just move forward. And next thing you know, you're standing. But it's usually not in the physical that you're standing. You're standing in your astral body. And then once you do that, you can ground. So once you're vertical, you can ground in the etheric realm, and then you could start moving around.
Awesome. Well, that was actually going to be my next question, because as I said, you know, I was laying in the bed. I was finally, you know, unlike other sleep paralysis experiences that I've had before this, I was actually able to speak and move. So I was trying to like shake and wake up my husband to like show him who else was in the room. But my question was going to be, if I wanted to actually be able to travel somewhere, how would I get myself to, you know, come out of my body and be able to actually do that? So
yeah.
I think you answered that.
So basically
that.
Just stand up and then
right.
move around. So your body is, your astral body is tied to your physical body. So a lot of people call it the silver cord because that's what
right.
it looks like. It kind of looks like a cord of light that extends from you. So your body is always going to be connected to your astral body. So the goal is to try to minimize that, maximize the distance between you and your body and minimize the strength that the cord has to pull you back. So the further you get, the more grounded you side of your body. So if you're very close to your body, it's very easy to just like go snap right back in. So once you are able to get vertical and ground yourself, then move away from your body. You could look at it because it's kind of pretty, it's pretty cool just to see yourself looking up, sleeping in bed while you're outside of it. So that's always a fun thing, especially in the beginning. But you want to move away from it. So just walk around, get out of your room, walk through the door, check out the rest of your house. You'll notice if you look at mirrors, you're not going to see yourself because you're invisible. So that's one thing that I thought was really cool in the beginning when I first started doing it, that like I looked in the mirror and I didn't see anything. So that kind of freaked me out at first, but it makes sense since you're seeing like a different dimension. And from there, you could kind of just like move around, like you could walk around the house, like go outside, just like see, experience what it's like, the elements, because once you're in your etheric body, that's the area, it's called, some people call it the zone girdling the earth, because it's very connected to all of the elements. So we all know about the periodic table elements, which are the earth elements. So everything in the periodic table is basically the earth element that's dense, that's heavy, that has mass. But there's also the water element, the air element. So water element is cool or cold, and the air element is very light, whereas the earth element is dense. And the fire element is very hot. So when you're outside of your body, you will experience the elements. You might even experience the beings that are associated with the elements, which are called the elementals.
Wow, so it's funny because from what I remember in this episode that I'm talking about that I had, the only element that I can recall experiencing was actually fire, because one of the people had like some sort of sage or something that was smoking. So that's really interesting because I didn't really make that connection.
Yeah, so you're going to experience everything really intensely on an elemental level. Like, I remember what my first time that I was able to get outside of my room and outside of my house, I basically was looking over the water, because I lived on outside on a bay, so there was a canal there, and it was like really amazing looking at the moonlight reflecting off of the ripples of the water, in the etheric realm. Like, it was
wow.
Just so much more pure than what you see normally in the physical. And then like I went in the back further, and I wanted to like test some stuff out, and I took a look at like what I could find in the back in a certain area. So I could test it the next day and see like if I would see the same thing in the physical, which I did. So I saw like a bunch of logs, but like wooden, logs outside on some sand. And I never saw that before. I guess they just washed up to shore. And then I thought for sure that this was not correct because I never saw them before. But then I looked the next day, and there they were, those three wooden logs in the same area that I saw them.
Wow.
In the dream state, in the etheric realm. So that's like a good validation.
Right.
You can kind of, like when you're walking around, you could kind of test yourself.
Wow, that's amazing. Ryan, how would you compare like everything that you're describing to sleepwalking? Because I actually used to sleepwalk as a child. I guess I always wondered like what that was about. Like, my parents would basically just find me like going down the stairs, and they would have to come get me and bring me back upstairs to the bedroom. And I would do that like a few nights a week for a while.
I remember that.
What is that about? Was I astral traveling? I mean, I guess I was not, right? Because I was in my physical body.
Well, your mind is in a different place, so your mind might have been in that realm, but your body was obviously still acting out. Like, you weren't, it's the opposite of sleep paralysis, basically. So instead of being paralyzed and not being able to move, but your mind being active, your body is active, but your mind is kind of like lost. Not really lost, but in the dream state.
So I think Jace has a question for you, Ryan. Go ahead, Jace.
I had a dream that I was trying to run through a wall, and I couldn't go through the wall, and I thought that I was in my astral body that couldn't go through the wall, or was it in my physical body that was not going through the wall?
Good question, Jace. Ryan, do you have an answer for that?
Well, Jace, if you were dreaming, then you're basically just, that was part of the dream, and you were more involved with the earth element, because that's the one that's dense. So normally, like, I've had that happen to me before. So one way that I test whether I'm in a dream state, well, one thing you can do to know that you're in a dream state is to like either walk through a wall or do something that you can't do physically. So for example, jump up and see if you come down. So if you jump up and you can't come and you float up, then you're dreaming, because that's not something that you can do in the 3D reality. But if you jump up and come down, then you're awake. But if you're thinking up to yourself, like, do I have to jump up? Am I dreaming? You're probably dreaming anyway. So that's
just
the reality.
Yeah, that reminds me of our previous episode on dreams, and kind of similar thing that happened to me when I was trying to put my hand through the wall and I realized that I was lucid dreaming.
Yeah, it could be tricky because sometimes you fool yourself because you have, you're stuck in the earth. You're very tuned in to the earth element above the other elements, and
stuck in
that
3D
density. Yeah, even in the astral, you can still have like, or in a dream state, you could still kind of be pulled down by gravity, because first of all, like, that's what your mind really thinks about. Like, when you jump up, you're going to come down. So that could be active in your dream state as well. But also in a dream state, you can be aligned with certain elements more than others, and the earth element will align you to gravity and the earth's pull and the density.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Okay, so going back to astral travel, let's talk about techniques and methods, because I know that's something that, you know, most people that are hoping to get into this are probably super curious about. What would you say are the most common methods or techniques that people use to get started on their journey in astral traveling?
Yeah, well, there's a few books on that, and one that got me able to do this is called Initiation into Hermetics by Franz Barden. So he was a really famous magician in the 20th century. He was in a Nazi concentration camp and managed to escape using magic and did a whole bunch of other really interesting things. And I started that book about maybe 2010, 2011. I think it was 2010. And I didn't really expect much out of it. I thought that maybe if I just meditated more, then I would be able to accomplish more in my waking reality. I didn't know about the astral world at that point. Like, it's not something that I even came across in any form of study. So I didn't even know that it existed. I just thought that meditation would be good for me in many ways, like in my waking reality. So I did the exercises diligently every single day for about 4 months. So it's like, it's not just one set of exercises, but there's different chapters, and each chapter focuses on certain exercises, like meditations, especially in the beginning. Then you go into concentration exercises, and then after that you can start working with the elements. So you start feeling the different elements, what they feel like, visualizing. There's a lot of visualization involved, so that activates your third eye chakra. And then once you do that, it just happens spontaneously. So what happened with me is that even though I had no idea what the astral realm was and that there's anything beyond the physical, it just happened spontaneously that I just like had these experiences where I would just, my mind would stay awake when my body was asleep and I would end up in the etheric realm.
So yeah, it's funny that you say that it happened spontaneously, because that was actually going to be my next question. What about people? I mean, I know that there's people that have like completely spontaneous astral projections, like, you know, people that maybe don't even know what it is or don't even like, you know, go through like what you did with the techniques in the book or any sort of trying to actually make it happen, but just kind of spontaneously end up astral projecting. Is it because they have less density, or like what would cause someone to be able to spontaneously astral project?
So I think when that happens, they are just really in tune with themselves. Mm. So I think astral projection is something that every person should do. We live in the Iron Age now, which is really dense times, and people are, it's a time of ignorance basically right now. But I think in other ages, it's probably easier because people kind of have that sense of what they need to do, and they're not kind of tied up with material things like we are right now. But it's everybody's birthright. Everybody should be astral projection. It shouldn't even really be something that's debatable, like whether you can or not. Like, this is something that everybody should be doing, because this is kind of like a internal thing, that we have this ability.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And on that note, Ryan, you know, I know, of course, just like with any other practice that's considered spiritual, there's always going to be skepticism and criticism, right? So what would you say, you know, to people that even doubt the existence of astral projection? For example, my husband, who, you know, we were talking to the other day, who just is completely a non-believer, and Ryan and I have devised a plan on how we can prove to him that it actually exists. So we'll be trying to do that soon and reporting back to you on that. But on a serious note, though, you know, what would you say to the skeptics and non-believers?
Well, like one common saying that you hear a lot is that when people criticize, they don't do. So if they actually do the exercises that can get you into the astral, then they would be able to do it themselves and they wouldn't have to believe anything. They wouldn't have to believe what other people do, and because they would be able to do it themselves. Because it's really, like I said, it's everybody's birthright. It's really just a matter of putting in the effort, putting in the work.
Yeah, so, I mean, on that note, with you saying that it's, you know, everyone should be doing it, or, you know, that there, it sounds like you feel like there's really a lot of benefit to it, or we could all, like, obtain something from astral projecting. I am actually someone, as much as I'm into all this stuff, I've actually always been kind of terrified of astral projecting. And I think it's because my experiences, even with like sleep paralysis, have, some of them have been like pretty horrifying. I guess I'll share one. I think Seda's familiar with the story, Ryan. I don't even think I ever shared this with you.
Okay, great. Go
but,
ahead.
Yeah, but during COVID, it was like a random night. I had a couple of drinks, you know, something that really doesn't happen so much anymore, but back then I guess we were all doing it, right? So
our COVID Zoom parties.
Exactly. It was after a COVID Zoom party. I'd had a couple of drinks and, you know, I was sleeping next to my husband in my bed, no big deal, you know, typical night. And I found myself awake, but I couldn't move. And I'm laying in my bed, and to my left is literally, I think it was the Grim Reaper, because it was literally like a figure with a black hood, completely black, and trying to like choke me, essentially, like making a choking motion like above my neck. And it was horrifying because I couldn't move, and I was trying to scream for help to Steven, my husband. And nothing was coming out. And eventually, I think I just like kind of woke myself up out of it. But it was absolutely horrifying. Like, I mean, I did not sleep well for weeks after that. So with those type of experiences, like, and I know I'm sure plenty of people have them. What exactly is that? Is that my own, like you said, my own fear that's projecting those type of figures, or you know, is that like a figment of my imagination, like a fear, I guess like a thought form, or how would you describe that or explain that?
Yeah, and to piggyback off of that, because that was actually going to be one of my questions when it pertains to astral travel. I know that I've read so many different theories on, you know, the shadow people that you encounter when you astral travel, which I'm assuming is, you know, similar to what Nujat experienced during her sleep paralysis. So, yeah, exactly. Do we think that those are, you know, our own shadows that we need to overcome? Are they other people, dark entities? What do you think the shadow people are?
Okay, so to answer Nujat's question first, to me that sounds like an initiation. It's something that's not necessarily bad, but our guides will try to scare us into waking up, basically. So that's something that we have to face our own fears. We have to face the dark sides of ourselves. So that's actually pretty common. I've seen Grim Reaper type figures as well. And yeah, we're cool. So.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I thought to myself, like, this must be a metaphor for like a death. I'm going through like some sort of death and rebirth process. Mm-hmm. That was kind of how I interpreted it. And I meditated on it afterwards. And that was sort of like what came to me.
Yeah, exactly. So that's part of the initiation then. So you figured it out then. It was an initiation based on death and rebirth in a certain area of life.
Yay, I passed.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so you can't give in to fear. You just have to accept for what it is. Like I had a similar initiation like that, where that same figure came to me and like made me drink this thing. So I drank it, and it was literally the most bitter, disgusting thing that I had ever tasted in my entire life. And this is, I mean, even in the astral, like I heaved, I almost threw up.
Oh, wow.
And twice. Yeah. So I almost threw up twice because it was so disgusting, even in the astral. So, but that is part of the initiation there.
That's interesting. I wonder if it was ayahuasca, right?
Oh, that's, I don't know. I never tasted. So if that's really bitter, maybe it is, because it was very nasty.
I mean, or maybe it was
pretty disgusting.
The astral realm.
Astral version of ayahuasca.
Right. For another awakening.
Yeah,
that's
so
super interesting.
So now to go to your question about the shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like me that they could just be like spirits minding their own business. They may or may not see you, but that sounds more like an etheric thing. So in the etheric realm, you'll see spirits walking around, and that's normal. But they might not be, they're probably neutral, most likely. Most spirits are not trying to harm you or help you. Most of them are neutral. So
just other people that are astral traveling and having their
could
own
be,
experiences.
Yeah. Or people that have died, or, I mean, there's a lot of different realms. So not everybody is living on Earth right now. There's a lot of people that have been on Earth past, and now they're somewhere else. And who knows what's going on with that. There's so many different realities, so many different timelines. So you could just be tapping into something else that's going on in the etheric realms that are overlaying this reality, because kind of like all these dimensions kind of overlap. So like you're on Earth, and like there's so many different dimensions here, like in the astral there's different so like whatever we do on Earth, it creates an astral imprint. So even if something is like destroyed, Like, for example, an old temple. If there was an old temple with a lot of rituals going on, a lot of things happening there, even if it's, like, destroyed and something's built over it now, you'll still have that astral temple that you can go to, and people could still go and do rituals there as they were, like, thousands of years ago. So there's always an astral imprint. There's always an imprint in the different worlds. And especially, like, when you get, like, right in between that level where you could see, like, the lower realms, like, the lower etheric realms, you could see, like an overlap happening, like, between the astral and the physical world.
Okay, so it's funny because you keep answering my questions before I ask them. My next question was actually going to be about the different dimensions, because obviously with all the personal research that I've done on astral travel, I've come across a lot of information about the different dimensions. So, you know, people will say, like, there's lower dimensions where you don't want to be, and then there's higher dimensions where there's, you know, angels and spiritual beings, lower dimensions with dark entities. How does all of that work? Is that true?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. So we are the densest at the third dimension. So I'm not sure if you can go any lower than 3D. I mean, obviously there's 2D and 1D. 1D is a point, 2D is a line, but that's not something, I don't know if you can project consciousness into that. But there is, so once you get past the 3D reality, then you're into the etheric realm, like I said, which is four-dimensional, and time acts differently there, and then there's the elements that are acting there. But then within that space, there's lots of different realities going on. And in the astral, forget it. Like, in the astral, there's, like, so many different realms you can go to. So as far as your question about lower realms, that is true. So that can happen pretty much on any level. Like, in the 3D, everything is mixed. So you'll have, like, you can be in a space that has very positive energy. You could be in a space that has very negative energy. But in the astral, it kind of separates off. So instead of just being in a linear timeline, like the 3D reality where everything is all mixed, in the astral, everything is layered on top of each other, so you'll have, like, different densities, different dimensions. And you can enter, like, there might be higher dimensions as far as, like, 4D or 5D, but it would still be in the astral, so it would still be, like, a darker realm, like a more primordial realm. So the primordial realms are what was called, like, the abortions of God, like they call them, in the Jewish tradition, in the Klippoth. So these are the lower realms where you can go there and get initiated into your shadow side. So when you go to the Klippoth, that's when you can learn from, like, the dark entities about, like, the dark parts of your existence and history.
So is that what you would call, like, traveling to the underworld? I've heard people use that term before.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's many different layers of that. Like, the Klippoth is, like, the main layers that people go to. And then you can go even below that, too. There's, like, no limit to the depths of the underworld that you could travel to.
So let's say I just, you know, finally managed to astral project and I'm out of my body and I'm, like, exiting my room. How do I make, like, the conscious choice? Like, okay, I want to go to the underworld or I want to go to 5D. Do I, like, call on an angel to escort me up to, like, the higher realms? Or, like, how do you avoid just, like, ending up somewhere where you don't want to be?
Well, I think you answered your question with the very first thing you said. You say, like, I want to go to this place. And that's exactly what I do. I speak my intention when I know that I'm lucid in a dream or out of my body, I'll just speak my intention to go to the place that I want to go to. And that is how you really do it. You just speak your intention. And as far as, like, getting guides, like, what I'll do is when I go there, I'll ask to speak to a certain guide in that realm. Like, for example, in the Klippoth, that's the dark reality that I just talked about. But each space there, whether it is the sphere itself or the tunnels between the sphere, has a particular entity that you can call upon that can kind of guide you through that. Like, they're called archdemons. And you can call upon these demons to guide you around these specific areas of the underworld.
Wow. So, okay, another question that I had, Ryan, if you could give us some insight is, you know, I know you mentioned that everyone should be astral traveling. So obviously, you know, there are benefits for us from doing that. What would you say, you know, are some ways that you can use astral travel for personal growth and healing, you know, similarly, I guess, to what we spoke about when we were talking about lucid dreams and, you know, being able to heal yourself or other people, how does that work in the astral plane?
Well, first you access all parts of yourself. So you're not limited, you're not conditioned, or you remove those conditions. So first of all, getting out of your body, first of all, removes a lot of conditions in itself. But then you notice that, like, there's so many things that you're conditioned to believe that are just plain wrong. So you kind of are too connected with the material body that you kind of condition yourself to have erroneous beliefs that hold you back. So when you hold yourself back, then you're going to miss out on a lot of things. So when you're in the astral and you could do these initiations, you can kind of peel away layer by layer like an onion all of these conditioned thoughts that you believed were true but are really holding you back. And the more that you do that, the more you're going to really grow spiritually and in every aspect, because it's not just spiritual, but it's growth on every level, mental level, physical level. Like everything is going to really align in that direction.
Wow, that's so interesting. So I guess I never really thought about it that way, that there could be benefits. So, I mean, I know in higher realms, when you're above third density, things, I guess, are supposed to move much quicker. So I guess I could see how that would be one benefit to astral projecting. Maybe if you're trying to heal something, is it true that it would heal faster because you're above third density?
So think of it this way. In regular waking reality, you are in the world of effects. So everything here is mostly effects. So the causes come from just experience, but when you're in the astral plane, for example, you're in the causal realm. So things happen a lot quicker from there. So you could really speed things up from the astral realm because you're in the density, like a dimension of causes rather than just mostly effects. So everything in matter is basically an effect of something else that happens above and beyond what caused it to be there. So when we are mostly used to living in a world of effects, things are going to kind of drag out a little bit. Things don't happen right away, but in the astral, things do happen a lot quicker because you're dealing directly with the causes and you can make very, very quick changes. And the higher you get, then the quicker it's going to be. Like, for example, there's even realms above the astral plane, like the spiritual realm. Like, the one that people think of most, like, first is the mental realm. So the way time works, like I said before, the etheric realm, there's not the same influence of time as you would experience in 3D reality. So in the astral, there's more control of time and space because you can kind of appear in a certain space and time if you have that ability to do so, to be conscious enough in the astral. So you kind of control time and space when you are conscious in the astral, when you're in your solar body in the astral. And then beyond that is like the real mental body, the real solar body, which is beyond any form. Like even in the astral, there's form. But above that, you're kind of just like a being of light where you can take form if you want to show to somebody else in the astral. But like, for example, the way that the higher beings, like the deities and the angels work, is the lowest they'll go is the mental realm, because that is the realm of the body of light. But they could still project to people in lower densities, even in 3D, because they could take specific forms that you would expect to see in lower realities, in the etheric and the astral and in the physical realm. So for example, they stay in their body of light in the third density, in the mental realm, and that is what causes these apparitions that people see. So the higher you go, like the less physical it gets, like the more spherical the bodies kind of act, like where it's kind of like what I talked about in the first episode where I saw that orb, that's more of like a mental realm type of thing because there's no actual substance to it. There's no physical form. So that is where there is like the higher mental plane to go to. And that's where you really have the most causal processes happening.
So have you personally ever made it to the realm where you're just a body of light and no longer in a physical body?
Oh, yeah, I think we all have at certain points. We don't always remember it because it is something that is totally alien to our way of life. But I think when we get into like a deep dream state and we have like that REM sleep, we all do that unconsciously. So to be conscious is a totally different animal, but that is the whole purpose of theurgy. So I'm not sure if you heard of that term before, theurgy?
Not really.
Okay, so theurgy is basically it's based on the ideas of the ancient Babylonians, and it was picked up by some of the ancient Greeks and Romans. So you kind of do rituals to improve, like to get above your body and even your astral body so that you could be on the realm of the gods. So that's what theurgy is, to elevate yourself to the realm of the gods. Because the philosophy behind it is that we are basically fallen beings. Not necessarily in a bad way, but we're in bodies and we don't have access to the higher realms normally. So we have to give ourselves that access by doing these rituals and by elevating ourselves to the realm of the gods, which is the mental realm, which is the realm of intelligences that they, as far as what they call them.
Right. Yeah, I think the closest that I've ever probably gotten to understanding that is when I was learning about the Merkaba and using, like, activating your Merkaba. Can you talk about that? Like, how does that, I guess, translate to being able to access those dimensions?
Yeah, the Merkaba is the chariot. That's what the Greeks call the Ochema, and that is the vehicle of the soul. So that a lot of these exercises, these theurgic exercises, are to do exactly that. And the Jewish people have similar rituals that they have done like thousands of years ago. Hekalot, I believe it's called. The Hekalot literature talks about that, about getting into your chariot, your Merkaba, and basically elevating yourself to the realm of the gods. In the case of Jewish people, they call it a descent. So that's the main difference. So with the Babylonians, the Romans, they call it basically like an ascent. The Jewish people call it a descent to the throne. But it's the same thing. Descent would be because you're going on the inner planes, the inner levels. But it's really the same thing. And a lot of the original Greek philosophers also talked about it as a descent to the underworld, to meet the goddess of the underworld. So that's how they described it.
So, yeah, going back to that book, so do you, because in the book I remember there's specific, protocol that you have to follow in order to be able to achieve that. And I remember there was, it said you couldn't eat meat, you shouldn't eat meat, obviously you shouldn't drink alcohol, just kind of keeping, your actual vessel as clean as possible. What is that what you know? Is that the same information that you have, or is there anything else that we should know that can help us?
Yeah, so that book, you mean Initiation to Hermetics or something?
No,
different?
This was the one about activating your Merkaba body.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's like what we talked about in the last episode on dreams, how you want to...
So energy conservation, basically.
Yeah. And that's like a big thing with Hindus as well. Like a lot of it has to do with conserving your energy, abstinence from food, alcohol, drink in general, from sex, everything. So a lot of it is just getting yourself out of the material realm so that you can access the higher realms. And to do that, you want to basically vibrate on a higher level.
Right.
Probably not get bogged down.
Dissipating your ego, right? I guess.
Yeah, that comes naturally with it. Like, you're going to naturally do that, like, by treating your body, like by not feeding your body the things that
desires,
your body craves,
right. Mm-hmm.
Then you naturally kind of dissolve those like carnal instincts, and mm-hmm. that brings you closer to the higher realm so that you can actually start doing more work. So that definitely helps. That's why a lot of people, when they, before a huge rite, then they'll eat light or they'll fast completely.
Right. I was going to say that. I've seen people say they don't need food or water once they get to that stage.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I guess, like you were saying, Ryan, so I guess essentially you have to kind of elevate your vibration, right? Like, make sure you're elevating at a higher frequency. And aside from that, are there other ways? I mean, like, for example, what are your thoughts on utilizing things like binaural beats and stuff like that to kind of get you into that theta state? Would that also just make the whole process easier?
Oh, yeah. So like the CIA stuff.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, don't listen to those.
Yeah. So there are some gateway exercises. I've tried them. I did it for a month straight. I wasn't really impressed personally. I expected more, but I think the reason is because they do work for a lot of people, but you're relying on something external.
Right.
So you're basically being hypnotized by these external sounds and frequencies I think that it's more effective when you just use your internal technology rather than rely on external stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And even if it works for some people, it's probably just because of their own intentions, right?
Yeah, and it might be good for beginners. So, like, because I started doing this just beginning of this year, but I already have, like, a lot of things that I do that work. So, not doing those and then doing this stuff instead, and I kind of, like, regressed.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I've definitely experimented with both. I've even just like in my, you know, day-to-day meditations, I've tried using things like theta waves or binaural beats, and then also just kind of sitting in silence and trying to get into that state on my own. And honestly, most of the time, I feel like I'm able to achieve it quicker when I just sort of sit in silence.
I have the same experience. Yeah.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. Yeah. And there is a third way, too. So we talked about two. One is relying on external technology. One is internal technology. A third would be doing it ritually. So when you do it ritually, like one example of that is to do it through devotion, which the Indians called bhakti. Bhakti means devotion. So you basically work yourself up in a state of love, love and ecstasy, mentally for like the beings that you worship. And that's something that you really need to know your guides first. That's a little bit more advanced. So once you meet your guides and your deities, then you can go into like that bhakti type of devotional stage where you kind of elevate yourself.
So basically they're helping you.
Connect with them. And that's an example of theurgy like we talked about before. So you're kind of linking yourself with these higher spirits, with these angels or devas or gods. You're kind of linking your own soul with them.
Wow. So yeah, I guess you have to really trust your spirit guides and angels and, you know, whoever.
Yeah, you don't want to just go to like a random spirit in your bedroom and say, hey, bring me to this place.
Yeah. And on that note, I was actually just thinking, like, what would you recommend in terms of like precautions and things like that? Because I've heard about lots of like protective sort of exercises, like putting on like a suit of armor and like all these crazy things that people do prior to entering the astral realm. Do you do any of those, Ryan, or do you just kind of like walk in there?
So if I'm doing a ritual, I'll just cast a circle and like I'll visualize like light going around me and like completely encircling me. I'll banish the elements. So there's the lesser banishing rite of the pentagram, which is most common one. There's a lot of different variations based on different orders and different techniques that you can do where you kind of banish the unwanted elements and basically like claim sovereignty in your space. But that's an altar. So if you astral projecting, you're going to be in bed. So in that case, I don't really do anything like that. I just try to keep myself in a positive state, like, and kind of think that it's already happening. Like, I am astral projecting. I am astral projecting. I am here. Like, think of your destination. I am going here. I am here. Not going, but I am here. So you just have to be in a correct mind state.
So again, intention, I guess, has so much
intention
to do with that.
Intention is everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, I've heard so many things like people putting on wetsuits, you know, obviously calling on Archangel Michael to, you know, place a bubble of protection around them.
Yeah, you could do something like that, like ask for a bubble of protection.
Yeah, I mean, I do that.
I do that every day when I leave my house.
Yeah, that's good. To shield you from negative influences, whatever they may be.
Exactly.
You could banish thoughts, too. Like if you notice yourself getting into, if you notice yourself having recurrent thoughts that are negative, just say like, I banish this thought. I don't think it anymore. It's not part of
me. Cancel clear, as we like to say.
Cancel clear, delete.
Yeah, because remember, your mind is like a radio receiver. You pick stuff up. So if you're picking up something that you don't want to pick up, and it kind of loops around and recirculates, then you just want to like banish that and then go to a higher level.
Yeah, that's my husband's least favorite phrase when we're having an argument and he says something to me that I don't like and I just say cancel clear.
Yeah, just change the station on the radio.
Right. Change the frequency.
I'm changing the channel now.
Love that. Okay, so now let's get into like the really crazy stories that you've shared with us, Ryan. And I guess we can start with probably one of the best text messages that I ever received from you was, oh. Hey guys, I was invited to an astral party tonight. Do you want to try to come? So can you talk to us about these astral parties that you've attended?
Yeah, so there are, at different parts of the year, there are the sabbats. So we just... like, for example, the equinoxes, the solstices, and then, like, midsummer and all that. So there are, the different sabbats. So they are celebrated, and, like, this is a common thing in the astral. So this actually goes back to, like, at least medieval times, probably way before that. But, like, we have, like, the people talking about witches getting on brooms and, like, getting their flying ointment. So what are flying ointments? Something like mugwort or even hallucinogens. So they apply their ointment, their flying ointments, which are hallucinogens, so that they are able to leave their bodies and fly.
So there is some truth to that.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely true. But, like, this happens especially on the Sabbats, because that's when a lot of energy goes into celebrating these certain things, and when a lot of energy goes into something from a lot of different people, it manifests, so... like a lot of people do rituals on those days, and right. then they create a space in the astral and everybody can go and meet there. And a lot of times you just pulled into it. So like, you don't even have to, sometimes you don't even have to consciously go. Like, I remember I went to one, I'm like, I was talking about it. And then, my friend realized like it was on, Beltane, which is one of the Sabbats. So, that explains it. And like, yeah. So sometimes you just resonate with it and you just get pulled there.
So for example, if there was a astral party, you know, going on tonight, and assuming we were all on the guest list, if we each made the intention to try to, you know, attend, how would that work? Is that all it really takes? Well, aside from, of course, like you said, sometimes you'll just get pulled into it, but is it enough to just like set the intention, like tonight I want to be at this place for this party, meet these people, before you go to bed? Or is there some other steps that are involved in making that happen?
Yeah, so basically just honor the day, honor the time. Like, you could do some ritual beforehand and really think about nothing but that for a long time, so that you can kind of remember yourself when you're asleep and be like, oh, do I have to be there? That's actually something that's happened to me a lot. Like, when I've had dreams, I just think to myself, I have to be somewhere. Like, where am I supposed to be? And like, I might say this for several times, like over the course of a dream, and then finally I'll have that aha moment, like, oh, I'm supposed to be here. Like, okay. And then you just go. So you could kind of get pulled there and into a dream, but it's better to be conscious and then just go consciously. And then once you're conscious and you have that intention, you had that intention before you go to bed, then it's very easy to get to. Just like, I want to go here, and then just, you're off.
Wow. But I mean, obviously, I'm assuming that pertains more to people that are, you know, I guess more advanced, right? And have experience with actually knowing how to astral travel.
Yeah, the experience helps.
Right. So I guess taking it back a couple of steps to like the very basics, what advice would you give to someone that's, you know, kind of starting out in their journey and you know, wants to learn how to start astral traveling? You know, just really basic advice.
Do the exercises, even the ones that seem really hard or boring.
So we're talking about the book now, the Hermetics?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
We're gonna
so that's
link
one of many. There's a lot of different books that give you actual practical advice. That's just the one that I learned from. But each one has like similar exercises where you want to work with the elements, where you want to meditate. And there's different types of meditation. Meditation isn't always just being a blank state. Like the easiest forms of meditation and the most basic are just not really thinking about anything in particular and just letting thoughts rise and then fall and then just without judgment. So it's not like you're completely a blank slate, but it's like a thought comes and then like, okay, let this thought go. And then the next thought comes, okay, that's gone too. Once you do that well, then you can get into the hardcore meditation. I think in that book, there's one meditation where you want to be at least like 10 minutes where you're 10 or 15 minutes where you don't have any thoughts at all. And once you get to that state,
that's hard.
Yeah. Once you get to that state, then you could kind of like combine that with just body paralysis as well. So you go to like 10 minutes without any thought and any body movement of any type. So
right. That's actually very tough. That was so hard. I remember the first time that we talked about astral travel when I was actually actively really trying to make it happen. Mm. I actually got pretty good at that part, like keeping my body very still. And I got to the point where like I started feeling the vibrations in my head and then I just snapped out of it.
Yeah. Those vibrations. That's
It was like a buzzing sound in my ears.
Yeah.
And actually on that note, I just remembered something else that's, you know, kind of like a very basic question, but does sleep position matter? Because I remember reading that like being on your back is supposed to be most helpful. Does that, I guess probably because you can stay still.
Yeah. Not only just staying still, but there's less like when you meditate or when you do exercises, you want your back to be straight. So you're kind of sitting up or laying down.
Right.
So it's the same thing when you're sleeping. It's just easier to work around the energies when you're not all twisted around. You could still, like, I'm a side sleeper usually, but like it's easier if you're on your back because everything is straight and the energy flows better.
Interesting. Maybe that's why I've never been able to astral project, because I sleep on my stomach.
Well, your will could still, you could still push through with your will.
Oh,
it's just
really? That's
something that helps.
For wrinkles. Can't believe you do that. Okay, so a couple more questions for you, Ryan, and then I think we can wrap it up. So, you know, obviously with all this traveling between dimensions, how do you stay grounded and balanced between the physical and astral realms?
Well, just keep yourself active. So it's one thing that I've done a lot more since I started astral traveling and lucid dreaming is trying to be out in nature at least once a week. Mm-hmm. And I feel that that really helps being out in nature and not, and away from like your usual hustle and bustle 9-to-5 type thing. That definitely helps keeping you grounded, like being in like with trees and plants, like living things and the birds and even some insects, not all of them. But yeah, just being around life, living things, like getting out from your four walls and actually like going out and like being around other life forms besides other humans that are just
connected.
Trying to figure things out.
Yeah. And probably grounding foods would help too, I would assume, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
And then what, you know, I know obviously there's many people that are so confused about exactly what astral travel is. And like we mentioned before, you know, we have our skeptics and non-believers and critics. What are some common misconceptions about astral projection that you want to clear up?
Oh, well, I know a lot of people are afraid of it that want to do it.
Like
but
me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that. So one thing I've heard people say is that, oh, what if I leave my body and I never come back?
Right,
I die. But
I
if it's not your time, you're not going to die. Like if it's your time, then you're going to die. But astral projecting is not going to make you die. So
possible to never come back?
I don't know. I don't want to go that far, but it would probably be highly,
cord,
highly unlikely.
Right. The silver cord is supposed to keep
you attached to your body.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's very hard to die when you're astral projecting. I wouldn't worry about that any more than just like if you're going to get hit by a car or something. Like,
right.
It would be very unlikely.
Okay. Anything else that
a lot? So a lot of people are afraid that they're going to get like possessed by like negative entities.
Or your body getting possessed while you're traveling.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, if you are conscious enough to be in the astral, then nothing's going to enter that space because it's easier to enter a space that's unconscious. That's why like people that are drunk are probably the ones that attract the most negative entities because they're able to enter their body so easily for what they crave. But if you're astral traveling, you can like you are in control. You have that consciousness already, so you're not going to give that up willingly to any negative spirit that's coming along. If you get possessed, it's because you asked to get possessed, like by something higher than you.
So on another note, Ryan, can you also like use astral projection to solve problems or, like, you know, gain new perspective or insights?
Yeah, absolutely. So once you get better at being able to astral project, you can kind of have structure as far as where you want to go, what you want to do, what problem you want to solve, what beings you want to speak to. Like, you can plan all this out ahead of time. So we could actually do at least one or possibly more episodes just on the Tree of Life itself. So that's an initiation that you could have on the astral plane. So there are many spiritual initiations that you could start in the astral plane, like the one I just mentioned, the Tree of Life. That's like a classic one to work on from the astral realm, because in that, well, we could talk more about that in detail in another episode, but because it's very complex, there's 10 different spheres that you can go to, and each sphere represents a different type of reality. And even between all the spheres, there's 22 different tunnels representing 22 different Hebrew letters, which each have their own vibration, and their own vibration kind of brings you into a different realm in themselves that are ruled by different entities and different planetary or even astrological rulers. So, and these are some things that you can experience on the astral plane, because like I said earlier, there's different levels vertically where you can kind of enter into a different space and learn everything that you need to know within that particular space. So you can really learn a lot from these types of initiations, like for example the Tree of Life, because there are so many different realms to explore, and each one is going to tell you so many different things. So you're going to get so much knowledge, and you're going to unlock so many things about yourself that you didn't know otherwise, and kind of like understand your soul history in ways that you didn't think possible.
Amazing. Wow. So yeah, I mean, that is beyond what I can even begin to comprehend. We absolutely have to come back for to do its own episode on the Tree of Life. But as far as our astral projection episode goes, I think that's it for today. I think we covered a lot, and hopefully we helped you, learn a little bit more about what the astral realm is, how you can achieve astral travel, and just learning about all of Ryan's really interesting experiences that he's had with astral traveling. And we'll definitely go ahead and link the book that Ryan mentioned in the show notes, because I think it definitely has a really, really great wealth of information on this topic. But yeah, that's it for today. If you like this episode, please make sure to review it and to subscribe so you can stay tuned for future episodes.
I hope you enjoyed learning about the astral travel. See you in the next episode, or maybe in the astral plane.